why is it so important just to sometimes just be and not be in this constant doing mode? What are the benefits for that? And why do you think that is something that we struggle with in our society?
We're exposed to so much information in a day. We take in the equivalent of 276 newspapers per day of information. So the brain cannot process all of that information. It's impossible. So when we stop and we pause, our brain processes that information. So when you go to bed at night, you'll sleep better. There's a saying by Einstein, which I really like. He says, I think 99 times, I find nothing. I stop, I swim in the silence, and the truth comes. I'll have a shower and say, I just got this great idea. Because you've paused, you've stopped, you've let your wisdom come out, you've let your creativity come out. If you get interrupted every 5 minutes in a 40-hour working week, by the end of the week, you've lost 8.5 hours of lost time context switching.
Mello, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I'm really, really excited to have you on today. And I just want to start by saying congratulations, because your book, Beating Burnout, Finding Balance, has just won 4 awards, which is absolutely incredible. We're going to go into that today. We're going to go into your book, why you've written it, who is it for, and how it can really help people with all of the stress and craziness of the world today. But before we go into your brand new book and everything that you're extremely passionate about around mindfulness and mental well-being, can you give a bit of an introduction to who you are, your background, and what brought you here today? So Mello, over to you.
Thank you. And thank you for the warm welcome. Nice to be here. What brought me to where I am now? It's been an evolution of my work over the years. So it's changed careers and ideas over the 3 decades of my living, or 5 decades of my living, the 3 decades of my working sort of career. And I've always helped people. Part of the backbone of the work that I've done has always been quite service-based, supporting people. Years ago, it was more like the physical therapies. So I was doing a lot more physical work with helping with rehabilitation, exercise, prescription. So still helping people. And I quickly discovered when I was helping people, especially with physical injuries, that often it would affect their mental well-being. You know, chronic pain often leads to mental pain, and it's quite challenging. And then I actually immersed myself. I designed some programs. I was working in psychiatric clinics. So I immersed myself in the mental health world because of that, because it fascinated me. And then I worked in mental health clinics for about 20 odd years and really cut my teeth in there, let me say. And I saw the good, the bad, the ugly of the mental health world. And then that evolved into, for me, wanting to prevent, to be more preventative, as opposed to working with people on the other end of the mental health spectrum where they already are in the clinics and clinically diagnosed and needing support. I thought I need to get people before they even come to the clinics and give them some strategies and some tools. So for the last 20 odd years, I've always followed that service and been coaching people, supporting people. And the work that I do now is more in the, I work with corporate executives, I work with athletes, I work with high performers to help them perform at their best without burning out, so they don't end up on the other end there. So and I love every day, that I work in that space because of the diversity of the clients that I work with. Anybody from, someone suffering mental health to high-performing Olympic athlete, let's say. So I love the diversity of it.
Incredible. Well, your skill set is very needed because I was sat reading over the weekend, got my morning coffee and read the paper as I always do. But there was an article that really stopped me in my tracks. And it was an article around saying that nearly half of Australians are chronically sick and mental health issues are on the rise every single year. And I read that and I just feel such a sense of sadness because, and I've shared this before in the podcast, that struggling with anxiety in the past myself, I know how gripping and just awful it can be. And when you're in it, it's so hard to feel like you're ever going to get out of it. And I was struggling to catch my breath and having panic attacks, and it was awful, to be honest. But I managed through a lot of techniques and things I'm sure you're going to go on to share to overcome it. And now I'm very aware, identifying, oh, okay, I need to pull back a bit now because I can feel myself getting a little bit like overwhelmed. But can you, I guess, share in your experience, because you said something really important before. You said about being more proactive over reactive. And I don't think we need to get to half the population being chronically sick. We can start doing things today to prevent that from happening. So can you share maybe some strategies and some things that we can be doing to stop us from even getting to that point where we're sick and we're unwell?
Yeah. And I like what you said before. You know, it saddens you to see, you know, this is happening. And myself also, I'm going back into a lot more workplaces now, as opposed to, you know, mainly doing virtual seminars and workshops. I'm going into the boardrooms and the conference rooms and all these big companies. And it also saddens me to see so much exhaustion, you know, so much burnout. Even if they're not even aware of it themselves, I can see it and I can read it on their faces that people are tired. People are genuinely tired. And part of it is, you know, we will still talk about, you know, the pandemic, even though it's 2 years later nearly, but a lot of it is a bit of a residual mental health hangover from the pandemic, you know, because, you know, we've gone through uncertainty, fear and isolation and a whole range of different things that happened over those couple of years. Lockdowns here in Australia, definitely we had, I mean, Victoria, we had the most lockdowns on the whole planet, basically. So you don't come out of that and suddenly, hey, I'm fine, everything's good. You know, it's going to affect our mental health. And I don't think a lot of people acknowledge that so much. You know, so they thought, yeah, it's business as usual, let's just get back into it and let's keep working. But if you're pouring from an empty cup, you know, if your resources are already low, you know, from those last 2 years, it's going to affect us. So a lot of us didn't really adapt to that or really take it seriously on how much it did affect our mental health. Yeah, so that's one thing, definitely that post-pandemic hangover, the residual effect of that. And the other thing is, I think this always-on mentality, you know, we work in a city or country or a society of always-on, we're always accessible, you know, high pressure, high demands, high workloads, this increasing pressure all the time to perform, to be accessible. And that also has an effect on our mental health. We're still trying to work the way we used to 10 years ago without, you know, adding any more tools and techniques to our toolkit and, you know, keep up these high demands and high pressure. So it really is acknowledging that. And what you said before, you know, around anxiety and, you know, these things there that are affecting us, often we don't notice it until it's too late. You know, when I interviewed for the book, actually, I interviewed over 200 people, all different, you know, walks of life, from high-performing executives to athletes to the everyday person, and 90% of them didn't realize they were burning out until it was actually too late. You know, so when they did feel that panic attack or that physiological response, you know, so for the best work is obviously preventative, so we don't get to that stage to start with. But we really need to sort of, the first step is self-awareness, you know, to be aware, to be self-aware of what's going on in the moment, to do what we need to do to manage our stress on a daily basis, to manage our anxiety and to manage that pressure. So it's a fast-moving world. We need to create some boundaries around that.
Yeah, I read actually a really quite alarming stat the other day around how we're now exposed to more data in a single day than someone would have been exposed in their whole lifetime in the 15th century. And I was like, and that's the thing, like our brains haven't adapted that much since then, right? So we've got all this information coming at us. And now we've got, you know, our mobile phones, which are constantly on, our things are pinging at us, our emails, our WhatsApps, our social media. Like, I mean, I don't honestly have the answer, because one part of me goes, well, I'm grateful for technology because we can do this. We can have these conversations now. I can share it on a global platform where people can listen. And then the other side, I go, it is also, there's a dark side to it. But you use the word there, boundaries. So with all this data coming in and all of this noise, what are some sort of healthy boundaries that we could start setting to try and almost switch off and just go, right, I'm leaving that at work, or it's 7 o'clock, phones away, What are your sort of thoughts around boundaries, and what do you personally do as well? Because I think, you know, you'd be, you know, a walking, talking example of what we could be doing better. So yeah, what are your thoughts on setting boundaries?
Yeah. There's a fair bit to be said, and especially if you have teenage children or young children in your house, also setting those boundaries. Here in our household, personally, we do have boundaries around that. We turn off all devices at around 7:30 at night. You know, one of my daughters bought a box actually from Kiki K, and it says disconnect to reconnect. And it's a little box, and we put all our devices in there at a certain time just to reconnect with the family and come together. But I know that's not easy for a lot of people, actually. It's actually really difficult. It's in this world now, especially when we're working from home in the hybrid workplace, it's so easy to say, I'll just quickly check a few emails after dinner. I'll just quickly answer one or two things. And before you know it, you're checking emails until 11 o'clock at night. And then you go to bed and you're stimulated and you can't sleep because you're thinking about work. You're waking up at 2 a.m. thinking and planning and problem solving. And it's going to have this effect on the next day, of course. So whatever you can to create boundaries, I encourage my clients as much as possible to just be really clear and intentional with technology use. So instead of just picking up the phone and scrolling brainlessly, be intentional. Like you said, it is a great tool. There's lots of information on there. But instead of letting it rule you, if you can, when you're working on something, an important task at work, put your phone on flight mode. Turn it off if you can. Do whatever you can to take control of the environment. Telephones in the bedroom, another sin, of course. Waking up in the morning, the first thing you do is pick up your telephone. And most people say to me, when I ask the question, why do you have a telephone in your bedroom? Most people say, it's my alarm clock.
Yeah.
But alarm clocks don't have social media. Alarm clocks don't have the weather and the news and emails. So most people wake up in the morning and they start scrolling on their telephone and they haven't even left their bedroom yet. And chances are their mind is already hijacked. So taking control of that, same as before bedtime, taking your telephone to bed. It takes a while for me to get some of my clients to do this, though, I must admit, because they're addicted to their device and it's their thing that they take to bed. But once they do, they thank me endlessly. I say, oh my God, Miller, it's like having a holiday every morning. I don't have to check my telephone. So morning, afternoon, evenings, whatever you can do to control those devices. And if you're taking a break, let's say it's a lunch break or a morning tea break or something at work, take a break. Most people, the first thing they do when they take a break is they pick up their telephone and they start scrolling. And it's like, that's not really a break. Like most people say they want more time, but they fill up their time with stuff, with fodder often. So, taking a break is really important. Most people don't give themselves permission just to be, just to be sitting. Just to be, even if you're sitting on a park bench watching the dogs run around outside or just sitting on your patio or on your deck or just sitting and being, most people will fill up their time with doing. So it's a really big one.
That is a really big one. And I'm sat here smiling. There's a few things you've said then. One, one of the best habits that I integrated into my life was not checking my phone first thing.
Right.
Because again, that was also a lot linked to my anxiety. I was like, wake up, half asleep, brain's in that sort of meditative state still, straight onto emails, LinkedIn. Yeah. Oh my God, what's going on in the world today? The news. And all of a sudden my whole brain is like in the world and I haven't spent any time going internally thinking about my breath and how I want to show up in the world. It's like, so that was the first thing I did. And that really made a big difference in my mental well-being. I do actually have my phone still in my room now. And you've made me think of what I could do to try and stop that from happening. But one thing is I use a meditation app. So I wake up every morning and I have my meditation app. So I'm just trying to think like, could I try and, I don't know, it's like, it's like reliant on technology, but it's like, I do pick up my phone, but I go straight into my meditation app every morning. Is that okay?
That's intentional. That's intentional. Okay. It's not like you pick up your phone, you do your meditation, and then you check social media straight afterwards. It's like it's intentional. You turn it off. Like you said, technology is fantastic. There's some fantastic apps. There's some great meditation apps. But as long as you're not just flicking and scrolling, because you haven't even left your bedroom yet and your mind's already elsewhere and maybe even stressed out. You might have checked an email that stressed you out or some disturbing news on the BBC News or something that's disturbed you, you are no longer in your bedroom anymore waking up. Your mind is already out there. So taking some control over that really important. But that point I make around stopping and pausing and just being is really important. Most people won't give them permission to stop. And if they feel guilty for stopping.
Yeah, I can put my hand up and say that was me. And yeah. And if I'm truly honest with you, Mello, of just like, you know, a bit of a counseling session here, I still have those moments. And look, we're coming in, like even if I reflect, like, you know, the build up to Christmas, it was a quieter period. And I have this habit of like, I've always got to be doing something. And it's so like ingrained in us, I think, is like just sitting with like, you know, a cup of tea, just sort of watching the world go by. It feels like, oh, I'm not doing anything, I'm achieving anything. And I almost felt like guilt for doing that. And I've spoken to a lot of people that really struggle with that. So why is it so important just to sometimes just be and not be in this constant doing mode? What are the benefits for that? And why do you think that is something that we struggle with in our society?
It's resource heavy to be thinking and doing all of the time. There's no capacity for your brain to actually have some space. You know, we need some space to, you know, drop into ourselves, to reflect, to process our information. I practice meditation every day. I start my day with meditation. I end my day with meditation, and I practice it throughout the day. And one of the reasons I practice it throughout the day, even if it's a 90-second practice or a 2-minute practice, is your brain will process information. So like you said before, we're exposed to so much information in a day. You know, for someone in the 15th century would take in a whole year. The other one around that I heard was we take in the equivalent of 276 newspapers per day of information.
Wow.
So the brain cannot process all of that information. It's impossible. So when we stop and we pause, our brain processes that information. It stores the good stuff that we need. It lets go of the stuff that we don't need. So when you go to bed at night, you'll sleep better because you don't have to do this big upload in the nighttime. A lot of people wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and they're thinking they're on because they haven't stopped all day and they're overstimulated all day long. And it's a long way to get back to sleep again, to fall asleep. So this overstimulated state, it affects our health, our well-being, our stress. It's not a healthy place to be. There's a saying by Einstein, which I really like. He says, I think 99 times I find nothing. I stop, I swim in the silence, and the truth comes. Sometimes we have to stop. Sometimes we have to pause. You might just go to the bathroom and come out of the bathroom or have a shower and say, I just got this great idea. Because you've paused, you've stopped, you've let your wisdom come out, you've let your creativity come out. There is no capacity for creativity. There's no capacity for any, you know, higher thoughts if you're always busy, 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 busy and on all the time. It's a great reason why. Stop, pause, because sometimes the very thing you need to be more productive and to, you know, improve your performance is to pause and stop. But most people, like I said, they won't give that. They think doing is better. Busy is productive, but busy doesn't always mean productive.
Absolutely correct. And I think busy in our society is actually used as a badge of honor. Oh, I'm so busy. I'm so busy. And everyone's like, oh, good. You must be. That means you're successful. That means things are going well. And I know I've said that many times throughout my career. And, you know, but now I'm really very more intentional about, okay, what are the outcomes that I want to achieve today? How do I want to show up? And
great.
We're so focused on time management, but actually what I've noticed about myself is energy management. And sometimes when I go into the day, like, I'll, you know, it's natural. You have higher moments of energy and maybe slightly lower moments of energy. And it's just like, and it's like when I'm sort of, for example, like mid-morning, I'm most energetic. I find like that's when I'm at my most creative and that's when I get my most work done. After lunch, like I'd sort of do sort of less tasks that require my sort of real focused energy. So for me now, it's not so much about time management and smashing the most into each day. It's actually like, okay, what tasks need to get done and what's the most creative or urgent, important, and when can I fit them in that I know I'm at my best? So it's just that different reframe. But look, obviously, it's sometimes easier for me to say this, and I know I say these things, but I also work for myself. I run my own business. For those that are in these big organizations where they're, you know, they are very outcome driven, it's goals, it's, you know, you need to be seen to be busy. You know, people feel like they've got to sit by their laptops and be seen to be busy or always online if they're working from home. But can you explain like what true productivity looks like and why it is different from being busy? Because I know sometimes I've got to the end of the day when I was like, I've been really busy today, but what I've actually achieved. So how do you describe like high performance and productivity? And when you're going into these bigger corporates, how are you educating the leaders on what actually being productive really looks like?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's quite a long answer for the question. And I'll start with high performance. So the term high performance itself, for me anyway, is actually to be a high performer for the long term, you know, sustainable for the long term. A lot of people think high performance is, you know, get through that job and do it as best you possibly can at whatever cost it can be. And then they usually crash on the other side. They're exhausted for the next week or maybe don't even recover from that. So high performance is to be, you know, sustainably working in a high performing fashion as a high achiever for the long term, for a whole year. A lot of people that I work with, they get to the end of the year and they finally get their annual holidays and they're sick for the first week because their nervous system is shot. They're running on nervous energy. So that's not high performance in a way. That's not a great way to go. So it is about maintaining your energy. Like I love the word you said there before, energy management. It's about manage your energy on a daily basis and doing things for yourself also, making sure you're eating well, sleeping well, exercising, taking regular renewal breaks, meditating if that's for you, or doing some sort of mindfulness activities. So making sure those things are in check, those fundamental 101 self-care things, first of all, they should be non-negotiable. They should be part of your habits and your DNA so you can maintain that high performance. And the other thing I'll say is be really clear and have some clarity on what you are working on and when. Yeah, so having clear lanes. So you're a morning person, you like to do your harder cognitive work in the morning, fantastic. Do your harder cognitive work. Be really clear on that. Then you might check a few emails after lunch, let's say, and do something that's less cognitive and wean out through the day. So knowing your peaks and troughs and riding both of those. When you're on, but also taking some breaks so then you have some off time so then you can ride that next wave. You might have heard of the term called the ultradian rhythm. The ultradian rhythm, it's a bit like the circadian rhythm, which is the sleep-wake cycle, but it's throughout the day. Yeah, scientists believe that we oscillate in different brain frequencies throughout the day. So we might be on for a while and then we're off for a while. We're on again for a while and off again. And the research around this also says that we can only really work in peak performance mode and optimal capacity for sprints of around 90 minutes, 2 hours.
Right.
So if you're not taking a break every 90 minutes or 2 hours intentionally, your capacity will be compromised. Yeah, so if you stop for 2 minutes every 2 hours or 5 minutes or 10 minutes or go make a cup of tea or do a meditation or go pat the dog if you're working from home or go for a walk around the block, your next 2 hours will be more productive. It's a much better way to work than trying to be. And I always think of those, you know, those Nutribullets, that buzz at very high frequency. You put all the fruit in there and it really oscillates at high frequency. That's what people try to do at work. Just work in this high frequency mode all day long. But what happens if we leave a Nutribullet on for more than 5 minutes or 10 minutes? It burns out. It can't keep going. I was thinking of it like that. So, you know, people try to work like this Nutribullet, but it's not the way to work. It's have some off time, have some on time. The other thing I'll say is also, I do a whole workshop around this where I talk about three different distinct modes of working. And one is the proactive mode where you're actually working on your job, your work, the important thing you need to do. So for you, it's probably that thing you do in the morning. So, you know, that's your job. When you're doing that, create boundaries. If you can, turn off your telephone in the background. If you can, mute your notifications. Do whatever you can do to stay in that lane and say, okay, I'm going to work on this proactive job for, let's say, the next 90 minutes or 2 hours. The chances are you get a little pop-up in the top of your screen and you open that pop-up and then before you know it, you're in your inbox and then you're checking your inbox and you're starting to do emails, which is no longer that job. So there's a huge cost to what we call context switching. So if you had, for example, if you had a pop-up that just popped up, or your telephone went off in your pocket or on the table there, and you didn't even check the whole message, it just took your mind elsewhere, it takes an average of 64 seconds to get your attention back on what you were doing before. If you're doing some work, it takes about 3 minutes to get back to deep work. So if you're doing deep work, it takes about 3 minutes. But if you add that up over the course of a 40-hour working week, let's say you got interrupted every 5 minutes in a 40-hour working week, and I think that's conservative. Most people get interrupted every 1 minute, but let's just go with that fact there. If you get interrupted every 5 minutes in a 40-hour working week, by the end of the week, you've lost 8.5 hours of lost time context switching. Wow. So you're switching from one thing to another. You're in your inbox, then you check a telephone, you're doing something else, and your mind is elsewhere. And exactly what you said before, you get to the end of the day, what did I even achieve today? What did I finish? And there's no alignment there. So that's the, you're owning which lane you're in. So there's the proactive mode when you're working on the thing that you're doing. There's also the reactive mode when you have to answer emails and, you know, make calls. So, you know, being clear on that. And the third mode is where people usually don't get enough time, is to be more creative. So the creative mode. This is more like bigger picture thinking, stepping out of the busyness and, you know, thinking of forecasting, strategizing, new ideas, ways to drive new business. So these three lanes are very distinct, different ways to work, and they take, you know, your awareness to actually stay in there. So proactive, reactive, and creative. Most people spend their whole day in reactive mode. When you ask them, they're busy, exactly what you said before. I'm busy. Oh, it's crazy at the moment. It's manic, you know, all these things, all that language. When I hear that language, to be honest, it's almost a red flag or orange flag that says they're not coping. And when they say the word overwhelm, when I hear the word overwhelm, that's definitely an orange flag that they've probably tipped over the edge of not coping. It's overwhelming at the moment. There's too much going on. And the reason I say that is because I work in psychiatric clinics, like I mentioned, and the patients come into my programs there, and I ask them, what happened? How did you end up in here? And they'll say, it was just too much. It was just too much. I couldn't take it anymore. I was overwhelmed. So working in this overwhelmed, busy, manic fashion is not sustainable for the long term.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. I completely agree. And I absolutely love what you just said then, proactive, reactive, and creative. I think it's really interesting what you just said then. I've not heard that before. Like, so 8 hours we could be losing by constantly being interrupted and trying to go back into the task. So I'm just trying to think, like, okay, so someone's listening to this right now and they're like, okay, because they're thinking, God, if I could get 8 hours back in my week, I could be more productive. Then I'm not going to be overwhelmed because I'm going to get more work done. So do you have any strategies then? Like, do you like schedule in like, okay, this is my proactive time. This is when I'm going to get these tasks done. This is my creative time. This is when I'm going to be reactive and check my emails. Do you like to schedule in these like, or time block, you know, that's quite popular, like color coordinate your calendar. Like, how do you sort of personally schedule this into your life so you can be more proactive, less reactive, and also have time for your creative work as well? Like writing a book, for example. So yeah, love to know how you sort of structure your days and your weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is about time blocking. It's different to just a to-do list. A to-do list can be, you know, thousands of different things on there. So it's a very intentional to-do list, which has priorities. And I'm a bit like you. I actually am more productive and clear. I have more clarity in the morning. So I'll do my proactive work in the morning. Instead of wasting my mental capacity and energy on opening up my inbox and see what I need to do, that doesn't take too much, you know, cognition, and that will hijack you. Chances are, if you open up your email first thing in the morning and check your emails, you're meeting other people's demands and you're not really clear on what you're doing, and you can get hijacked and stuck in there the whole day. just answering emails. So it's a bit of a waste of morning energy when you're feeling good. So yes, time blocking. So I'd spend, let's say, 2 hours on a proactive task. So I've got to design this presentation or whatever it is that I'm doing. Turn off devices if I can as much as possible, depending if I'm waiting on a call or something. But typically I'll turn my phone onto flight mode and just own that 2 hour block. And I work in that 2 hour block. There's a great book you've probably heard of, Eat That Frog. Brian Tracy talks about, eat that frog first thing in the morning, the rest of the day flows. Then what I'll do is I'll choose to, so it's no longer reactive. I've chosen to go there, and then I'll go into the answering a few emails and, cleaning up my inbox and automating, delegating, whatever I need to do there. And that will be maybe 45 minutes or an hour, nothing more than that. And then I'll go back, maybe have a little break, have a cup of tea or go for a little walk, freshen up, have a stretch. And then I'll come back and do another block of 2 hours of proactive work. So you're really you're very clear on which lane you're in, because they take different mental capacity to be in that sort of deep work of proactive versus just answering a few emails. I call those ones there sort of quick wins. They feel good because you tick off a few little ticks, you get a little dopamine hit. Oh, that felt good. Answered that, did that. But the trouble is you can get stuck in the quick wins because they feel good and you get this dopamine release and you procrastinate the hard work, the deep work. So very clear. You might, let's say you keep doing quick wins all morning and then it comes 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you haven't even started your work yet, and that often happens. And then you start doing your work, but because you're so cognitively tired, I'll do that tomorrow morning. I'll bump that to tomorrow. I'll do a few more quick wins. So being very clear on which lane. So proactive, when you're in proactive, working on that. I personally, another little hack that I use is I have a little park pad next to me. So a little pad next to me. So if I'm in proactive work and something pops into my mind, I won't action that thing because if I open up my inbox, I'll get hijacked. I'll just write it on a little park pad next to me. So call Jack or, text Georgie or email somebody. And then at the end of my 2 hour block, then I'll pick that up and I'll action what I need to action. Because otherwise you're flicking from one lane to the next. And the last thing I'll say around this is the creative zone is that's another whole frequency of thinking. Like I said before with the Einstein quote, I think 99 times I find nothing, but I stop and I swim in the silence and the truth comes. Sometimes you have to stop to do this. So I don't see clients and I don't do seminars and workshops on Wednesday afternoon and Friday afternoon typically, and that's my creative time. So I'll create new presentations, I'll create new ideas, I'll step back a bit out of the busyness. Sometimes I'll even go elsewhere, maybe go to a cafe, go to an even park at the beach or just somewhere that's a bit more creative instead of being in my office, which is very, reactive and proactive. So that's how I take control of them. But whatever it is for your listeners, work out when you work the best, when you're most cognitively aligned, and do the proactive work then. And then intentionally switch to the reactive work. Don't let a pop-up take you to the reactive work. Intentionally switch there and then create those creative zones. So very three distinct ways of working.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to think about it that way before, because I've tried time blocking, I've tried doing different things before. But one thing that I've always struggled with, and I think there's a few people that are in like sales, real estate, recruitment, we rely a lot on our phones and emails because, if a client might call and say, I want to interview those three candidates that you've just sent. Like, I find I'm on my emails a lot during the day. And I'm always trying to be intentional as I can. I'm going into my emails now. There might be things there, but I have struggled in the past to put my phone away because I think, what if I miss a client call? What if those candidates need to get booked in? What if like somebody doesn't show up for an interview or something gets canceled last minute? Like, it's very... I sometimes do struggle in sales, and I was speaking to a real estate agent the other day and they were sort of saying the same thing. Any advice for those people that are in that more service-based industry where we do rely heavily on our phones and our emails and like literally something could come through and it could just throw out your whole day? So, because I always go into the day with the best intention. I don't check my emails and I sit down and I go, right, I need to work on this or do that or get into a bit of a business development zone where I'm sending some messages on LinkedIn and trying to drum up some new business. And then the phone will go and I find I'm back in reactive mode.
Yeah.
Is that,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm just sort of trying to think
you.
Of like...
I hear you. I understand. And some of us do need to work in real time. Some of us do need to be on and be accessible to people. So it's not possible to turn off your telephones or your notifications. And I understand that. What it is about being very clear on what you're working on and when.
Yeah.
And what the hierarchy of priority is. So if you, let's say you are working in that, you know, proactive mode and you're doing that important job and the telephone does ring and you need to answer it, of course you'll answer it. You won't just ignore it if it's somebody important. You'll take that call and then still put it in your hierarchy of importance of that day. Do I actually really need to action that right now? If so, pause what you're doing and action that. Or can that wait till the end of the day, or can that wait till tomorrow? Then you put it into your hierarchy of importance. So in that moment, you're almost like triaging the importance of that. And that will just, as soon as you get it out of your head and you schedule it in, I might get a call, for example, when I'm doing something. And then immediately when I action that call, I either have to action it or I'll put it into my week. Okay, I'll do that on Tuesday morning. As soon as you put it into the Tuesday morning slot, you can get it out of your head. And you can go back to the work that you're doing. So it's almost like really, you know, being crystal clear on your hierarchy of importance of that role. And also give yourself space throughout the day. So if you're someone that's always on, if that is what you need to be, you need to balance that out. So you might have heard of the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous systems. So the sympathetic nervous system is that fight and flight response. So if you are always reactive, waiting for that call, picking up that phone, jumping on this, jumping on that, you're in this sympathetic nervous system activity all day long. And it's almost like you are initiating a fight and flight response all day long, especially if some of those calls are important and they give you a surge of adrenaline and cortisol going through the body, it puts you in a high state of stimulus. The polar opposite of that is what's called the sympathetic nervous system, which is the opposite of fight and flight. It's more like the relaxation response. You can't be in a whole day of sympathetic activity without any cost to your health. So let's say you have, you know, a string of calls and it's been quite taxing and it's been like quite energy heavy, then it's time to pause, have a renewal break. Like I said, I teach 90 seconds or 2 minute meditations. That's enough just to stop so you can deactivate the amygdala, the stress center, and you can activate the parasympathetic nervous system through some breath work. So finding balance in that day. So for me, it's about finding balance, not just in your week, it's finding balance in your day. So if you are somebody that needs to be reactive and on all day long, you always have to find little windows of being off so you can find that sympathetic and parasympathetic balance in the day. Otherwise, if you're sympathetic all day long, fight and flight all day long, you're just going to crash at the end of the evening and be exhausted. And that's not a healthy way to work. Is that useful? Has that answered that question?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And been there, done that. And that's why I struggled so much with anxiety, because I was constantly on, constantly reactive, constantly waiting for the calls, like go, 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 go. And I was working in a very high-pressured sales environment as well, where if you didn't hit those targets, it was like, you might be out of a job next week. So that, on top of that, was just, no wonder for like 5 years straight, I really did struggle with anxiety, because it was just like this constant pressure that I ultimately put on myself as well. If that constantly being in reactive, doing go, 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 a million miles an hour, never time to break and recharge. And that's why when I found meditation, it completely changed my life, because it turned off the flight or flight response.
Yes.
And I could actually go back into just focusing on my breath, focusing on just like breathing and slowing down the mind that was constantly like a million miles an hour. But
I'll add to that actually while we're on it, because I was doing on the sales front, you mentioned sales teams and, you know, people in that high performing, you know, very always on. I recall doing a 6 week mindfulness program for a large company. And there was a guy in the first week in the group, he was always on his phone. He was checking his phone the whole time. He got up, he walked outside at least, you know, 5 or 10 times. It was the end of the month, so he probably had these big targets to reach, you know, in this high anxiety state. And he was quite disruptive it was a 90-minute session. He was quite disruptive and he kept, you know, heckling me, "Mello, I don't need this stuff. I'm too busy. I haven't got time for this stuff there." I said, "It's up to you. You know, it's your choice. You know, I'm not holding you here, but it is a 6 week program and I'd love to see you each week." He didn't come back to week 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. The rest of the group did, because he was too busy with his, you know, sales and all those sort of things. It was really sad, and it saddened me, because only about 6 months after I did that program, I was working one of the psychiatric clinics, and guess who walks in the door? He was totally burnt out, totally. I didn't even recognize him. He put on a lot of weight. He was highly medicated. He didn't recognize me at all because he was so medicated. And I was really sad because if he stuck around in that program, he could have had some preventative measures to not be in this state. But he just felt this busyness was more important. And it's true, you get consumed by the addictive behavior of this, you know, reactive work. So it's a really good illustration if we sometimes stop and pause and take on some of these mindfulness techniques and meditation techniques, you know, we can stop being there in the first place.
God, that's such a powerful story. And I also think it becomes our sense of identity as well. And we sort of like identify with this high, you know, pressured, performing, stressful person. It's like, actually, it's just so unhealthy. And God, if I could go back to, you know, me 5 years ago and say, listen, this is not high performance. This is not how you're going to achieve anything in life. This is just the highway to burnout. So God, that's just such a powerful story of like how if we have the right tools and strategies, we can avoid getting to that stage where we're highly medicated and completely exhausted. But can we talk to now, obviously, your book? Because I feel like writing that, you don't win awards if it's not full of like, you know, some amazing things. So What was the moment where you thought I've seen so much now, I want to help, I want to give back, like, and how can we beat burnout and find balance, which is the title of the book, which I think is just so perfect. So yeah, I'd love to know, like, what stage did you go, I have to write this book, and how can we actually begin to find balance? And perhaps even as well, I'd love to go into the early signs of burnout, because I'm sure you can identify it. Like you said, you know, you go in, you could go, oh God, that person's close, just by their mannerisms, their expressions, their body language. So yeah, I'd love to sort of go into the book and how we can really prevent burnout and find balance in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few questions in there. So
I just got so excited.
That's all
then.
Good. It's all good. So the book was born out of, you know, the passion, you know, to help as many people as possible. It really was. And most of my work that I do is in-house, so I do a lot of corporate programs in companies. So you know, some of the largest companies in the world that I work for, and people know me within those four walls, and you know, companies hire me to come in and work with their companies, but not many people knew me outside of those four walls. So I wasn't helping the general population. And I realized during the pandemic there where I was, you know, doing a lot of virtual seminars around the world because the companies would open up their seminars to their global partners. I spoke to about 75,000 people during the pandemic alone, supported them with workshops and seminars. And I thought, you know what? I want to help even more people. I want to help people that are not in the companies, that are the everyday people, you know, that can go pick up a book off the shelf. Yeah. So that's where, you know, the book was born, Beating Burnout, Finding Balance, because I wanted to help anybody and everybody with the skills and knowledge that I have. So I've honed my work over the last three decades of the work that I do. And I just wanted to, for me, the goal was to simplify the complex, to make it really simple, really applicable. So someone can pick up my book at the airport, let's say, they can go home and they can read it and they can get some benefit immediately. You know, it's not convoluted with, you know, stacks and stacks of research and heavy material. It's very accessible. So each chapter actually starts with a story. So one of my stories from cycling around the world on my mountain bike. So I cycled around the planet on my mountain bike and I had all sorts of crazy adventures. So it'll be the lesson that I learned from that experience. And then it'll share the teaching of that. So the actual concept of might be, you know, self-awareness or self-regulation or stress or resilience. And then each chapter has a simple takeaway thing that you can do at home, a practice that you can do really easy. So that was the goal. And already I love it when someone writes me an email and says, thank you so much for the book. It's helped me to manage anxiety, or it's helped in my relationships, or it's, you know, helped me go through a difficult time with cancer. So it seems to be hitting the mark because of the simplicity and the accessibility of it. So that's where that was born, that I'm on a mission just to help and support as many people as possible. And I thought the book is a really good format that, you know, people can pick up, they can take home. A lot of people say to me, I just keep it by my bedside and I just dip in and out whenever I need it. I just grab a few little tools and techniques. So that's where that comes from. And like I said, when I was interviewing for the book, it actually, you know, surprised me to hear that 90% of the people didn't realize they were burning out until it was too late. So I wanted to have preventative strategies in there that people can prevent burnout happening in the first place, you know, as opposed to dealing with it later on. And for me as a coach, the coaching work that I do one-on-one, I might meet someone in the full burnout state, in the total red zone where they're no longer functional. They can't even function their job anymore. I might meet someone in the orange zone where they're just tired and exhausted and they need some strategies and tools to get back to the green zone. It might be the yellow zone where I meet a lot of people, and that's that chronic stress, overstimulated zone. And then there's the green zone, which is, yeah, you're functioning really well. You're optimizing performance. Yes, there's stress coming in, but you can deal with it on a daily basis. So my goal is to get them back to the green zone so they're operating at the optimal. It depends on where I meet them is how much work it takes to get back there. So obviously, if they're just in the yellow zone, that chronic stress, it doesn't take long to get back to the green. As opposed to the red, it's going to take, you know, some time to get back there. So as I was writing the book, I was wanting to accommodate all those people to make sure that, you know, people can get tools and strategies to get back to that green zone and operate at their best, which is sometimes easier said than done. And the very first step is self-awareness. You can't change what you don't notice. So some of the early signs will be, you know, just tired all the time. So the WHO, they have their, you know, 2019, they revised their definition of burnout. And it's basically not looking after yourself for a prolonged period of time. So this unmanaged workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. I don't think it's only workplace stress. I think it's just stress in general. So it can be financial stress, relationship stress. And the three main criteria that they say is, number one, that feeling of absolute energy depletion and exhaustion. Number two, a bit more cynical and negative, you know, throughout the day, or complaining more than usual. And number three, they say, is the lack of efficacy, or basically lack of, you know, your efficiency and effectively how you work. So if you're starting to feel a bit more tired, and, you know, a good night's sleep doesn't fix it, or a weekend away doesn't fix it, chances are you might be heading towards burnout. Or maybe you're lacking some drive and purpose and passion, and or unmotivated. It could manifest like that. If you're starting to complain more than usual, or you don't have something positive to say, or you might be in a workplace and you're just sort of moaning about everyday life and everything just seems too hard, chances are you might be heading there too. And the last one there might be, you might make more errors, or something that normally will be easy for you, and someone gives you a job to do, says, oh, do you mind doing this? It's, oh my God, it's just too much. I can't take it, because you can't function anymore. So something that normally would be easy for you is much harder. So that's the three main areas. And they manifest differently in different people. You know, sometimes it's the obvious ones are the first ones, the physical ones. You know, you just tension in the body, tightness in the chest, tight shoulders, exhaustion, you know, can't even get out of bed because you're so tired. They're usually the first signs, but sometimes it's the more subtle ones, the behavioral and the emotional ones, that affect us too.
There's quite a lot there. And I think, yeah, you know, unfortunately, I think some people will be listening to this right now and going, I can identify quite a couple, yeah, of those. And it could be quite confronting to hear that. So let's just say there is someone listening to this right now, and they have a couple of those. What can we do? What are some strategies? You've mentioned self-awareness. We've briefly touched on meditation, taking those breaks, anything that people can do to start turning it around if they have identified that they have some of those symptoms.
Yeah. And then that's the truth. Often when I'm presenting in a workplace, people say, wow, I didn't realize that's me. Actually, yeah, this could be me. So, which is a good thing in a way, because then we can actually take action. So for me, it's very simple. I try to keep it really simple and simplify the complex, like I said. It's three things, really, three things. The very first step is that self-awareness piece, being aware of where you are at, how burnt out am I? Am I in the yellow zone? Am I just chronically stressed? Or am I in the orange zone, sort of a bit tired and exhausted? Or am I even towards the red zone? And what do I need to do to get back to the green zone? So the first step is self-awareness, and maybe even acknowledgement and admitting it, actually, you know, opening up that conversation. Hey, I am struggling a little bit. I need some support. So number one, self-awareness. Number two is the ability to self-regulate. So this is a big one, to be able to self-regulate in the moment. And this is where the meditation practices, the breathing work, the breath work can help. whatever it is that you need to do to self-regulate. So if, let's say you're just exhausted at the end of the week, you might say, what do I need to actually recharge? What do I need to, you know, get me back to the green zone? And for everybody, it's different. It might be spend time with the family. It might be go for a nice walk or a hike. It might be just to rest and recover. It might be go to your happy place, go to the beach or go to the forest or the mountains. So the ability to self-regulate is important. And number three is self-care, like fundamental self-care. And this cumulative effect of burnout, usually burnout doesn't just suddenly happen. It's a long-term process. It might even go over the course of decades. You know, if you're working in a high-pressure job, it might be months, it might be years, but it could also be decades. So this cumulative negative effect on your health can be reversed by cumulative positive effect on your health. So doing these self-care practices, often when I'm teaching self-care practices in the workplace, so many people say to me, I know this stuff already, Milo. I know I need to eat well. I know I need to sleep well. I know I need to exercise. But we can know it, but we actually have to do it.
Yeah,
we have to do the practices. I talk about in my book, one of my clients is a professor. You know, he's far smarter than me. You know, everything that I was saying to him when I was doing the work with him, oh yeah, I wrote a paper on that, Milo. I wrote a research paper on that. He's a professor with titles after his name. So you can know it very well, but you actually have to do the practices. I met him in the orange red zone, so he was close to burnout. So it's one thing to know it, but you have to practice it. So what I say around self-care is six things, really. So number one, exercise, making sure you're doing something to move the body, you know, get the endorphins going. Number two is nutrition, of course. We all know that food is fuel. We need to eat well to perform at our best. Number three is sleep, which is a huge one, you know, getting adequate sleep. The research says that, you know, not getting 8 hours of sleep, you're 33% more likely to suffer depression and poor mental health. So even just not getting 8 hours can affect your mental health. And I do a whole seminar just on sleep alone, so that's super important. And then on the other side is the renewal breaks, like I said, you know, taking regular renewal breaks, creating boundaries, and then the mindfulness work there. So if you don't have those six things in place, chances are you're not performing at your best and it's not sustainable. So I'll relabel this non-negotiable self-care. Make it non-negotiable. Because when I'm working with people, often what I hear is when you get stressed, when you get busy, when you get overwhelmed, the first thing you do is let go of those things that you need the most. I won't go to the gym tonight. I'm too busy. Ah, I forget about cooking. I'm too tired. I'll just grab some takeaway. Oh, yeah. Or you stay up late and you binge watch on Netflix so you don't get a good night's sleep. So usually the things that we need the most to perform at our best, but when we get stressed, we let go of those things. So reclaiming self-care. So I'll just summarize them again. Self-awareness, self-regulation, and non-negotiable self-care.
I love how you've labeled it as non-negotiable. I have been preaching this to like my colleagues, my friends, my family, like anyone who will listen, people on this podcast, the importance. And like you just said then, I get back, well, I don't have time to exercise. I don't have time to meditate. I've got such a busy life. I've got two kids. I've got to get them to school in the morning. I'm like, you can find 10, 15 minutes to sit and meditate. You can, you know, maybe instead of dropping your kids at the school gate, maybe you could park a little bit further away and actually do a walk with them. You know, like it is just about prioritizing it. But if people actually knew the benefits, I think this is the thing, is like people just go, 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 go. And then again, then they get the diagnosis. Then yep. They get told they got the chronic health condition. And then it's like, oh, now I actually need to do something. But we can prevent these things from happening if we just start with these non-negotiable, like you said, self-care practices. One thing I find, especially with women, is they think it's selfish. Oh, no, I'm happy to be but put at the bottom of the barrel because I've got to support my family. I've got to make sure my kids are dressed and they get to school on time. They've got lunch boxes and they put everybody else before their own, before themselves. And then I go, well, how's that working out for you? Are your children, your family, your friends, everyone getting the best version of you? Or are they getting a exhausted, burnt out, you know, no energy parent? You know, like I know for me, like one thing that my parents did very well, and I want to acknowledge them for this, is they did always take care of themselves. My mum did have great energy because she did exercise, she did eat healthy, and that was an absolute priority for her, as was my dad. Like, I don't recall a time when my dad wasn't either playing squash at the gym, playing golf, walking. We were a very active family growing up, and we ate well, and that was installed in me. But I appreciate it's not installed into every single person, but the non-negotiable self-care, if that's just an absolute huge takeaway for everyone on this podcast. And sleep, like you said then, it's like, you know, just prioritizing sleep. It was the best thing I ever did for my mental health, was just having a cut-off TV time and a cut-off time when I ate and got those 8 hours of sleep. And that again was the turning point for my mental well-being. But I love the fact that you say non-negotiable, huge. But look, we are in the new year now, and I think the good thing about that a new year gives you is the time to reset, refocus. So final question before I let you go, and I could honestly sit here and chat to you all day, but if you could just give somebody, like, I guess, one piece of advice of like how to set themselves up for a successful 2024 so they can find balance and prevent burnout and prevent this overstimulation and this overwhelm that we're all sort of seem to be going through. What's one piece of advice you could give to someone just to finish off the podcast? If you just do this, this will help this year.
Yeah, it's always exciting in a new year, isn't it? It's always so exciting. You set all these new goals. I only read recently that there's a day called Quitter's Day, and Day is the January the 22nd, I believe. So 22 days after they've set their New Year's resolution, most people don't do it. They quit it by the 22nd day. So they haven't even left January yet. So hopefully that's not you. So, and often it's because they set a hard goal. So it's a goal with, you know, big measurables on there, which I do myself. I set goals. So what I personally do is I set two things every year. So I set a goal, and the goal will have some measures in there. It might be 1 year was to swim in the sea every single day. So 365 days to swim in the sea, which I did, I accomplished. It might be to, you know, do 30 push-ups a day or whatever it is. So there's a number in there that's measurable. They're usually a bit harder to keep up, but I always set a goal. So you can set a goal, fantastic. It might be to, you know, lose weight or whatever it is, a health or fitness goal or work goal. But the thing that I do every year, and I think this is even better than setting a goal, is to set an intention. To set an intention for the year. So an intention can just be a word, could be a phrase. So the intention is something that you can keep up throughout the year. Even if you slip a little bit, you can come back to it. So for example, it might be, this year I'm going to be more present. I'm going to be more present with my kids. Or this year I'm going to be more energized. Or this year I'm going to be more calmer. This year I'm not going to sweat the small stuff. Or this is the year for travel. Or this is the year. So just, you know, bringing it down to one word. And when you set an intention, it sets you up for that day, for that year. You know, for every single day you're setting your intention. So say, for example, your intention was to be more present, and you find yourself, you're not present with your kids. It's like, hang on, my intention this year was to be more present. Give yourself a little smack on the hand and say, what do I need to do to be more present? You know, so, you know, many of you may be mums out there, and the best compliment you can give your children is your full presence. The best compliment you can give everybody. So I encourage everybody to set an intention. And the other thing I'll say is, it's not always about adding more. Most people add another thing to their year. Unless, oh, this year I'm going to start doing this, or this year I'm going to start doing that. Maybe sometimes it's worth taking away some things, letting go of some things. Often the work that I do with busy executives, especially I coach a lot of surgeons and, you know, professionals that have been in their career for a long time, it's actually the taking away of something, maybe a habit that hasn't served them well, maybe to work a little bit less, or to have less meetings, or to have weekends off, or to have more time on the weekends with your family or children. So maybe sometimes it's not adding more to the new year, it's taking away something that hasn't served you well. So there's two simple tips to create an intention, a clear intention that you can actually, you know, stick to, and maybe sometimes taking away.
Incredible, fantastic advice. I want every single person that listens to this to go and get your book, because I think it would help so many people. But where can I send those that want to find out more about you and your work? Where do you hang out the most?
Yeah, well, I'm happy to send through, if you like, a link to a free sample chapter of the book.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, I'll send that through. You can put it in the show notes. And that sample chapter talks about an experience where I had to meditate in a storm, and I had to meditate for 12 hours actually to survive a storm. It was a near-death experience. So, and that's all about self-awareness. So the first chapter is about self-awareness. So mm-hmm. a good place to start. Happy to send that through to you. The best place you can find some resources and information about me is my name, Melo Calarco. I know it's probably a hard one to spell, MeloCalarco, MeloCalarco.com, but I'm sure we can easily put that into the show notes. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to support in any way possible. So if I can help you today with a few simple tips that you can take on for the rest of your life, I'd love to hear from you in a year's time and say, hey, you know that thing that you taught me? It helped me through a difficult period. So sometimes these small little habits can really make a huge difference to your overall life and well-being. So I'm accessible anytime, anywhere, just through my website.
Melo, thank you so much. And I wish that I had your book in hand 5 years ago when I was definitely struggling. But I think everything you've spoken about today reinforces the importance of that self-care, that self-awareness, and everything that you've spoken about. And I'm definitely taking away a lot from this conversation today. So thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your wisdom and sharing your knowledge. And I can't wait to have you back on and maybe a year or so's time, and we can talk more about these really important topics that are very much needed to be discussed in our society right now. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.